Baby. Why are you up? You can't sleep? Oh, I'm sorry. Come here. I'm sorry you can't sleep. I know you've been under a lot of stress. And I know you well enough to know that you're gonna be worrying about it. You're gonna be thinking about it all the time. I know you. Well, it seems like you won't be going to sleep for a while, so I'll stay up with you. You know what my mom used to do to help me fall asleep when I was a little girl? She would read me a story. My favorite one was Beauty and the Beast. I know, it's stupid, but I don't know. I've always loved it. I actually think I might have a book of it. I mean, get it. Let me just turn on the lights. That's better. Yep, I have it. Okay, just lay down next to me and let me read to you. Once upon a time, there was an extremely wealthy merchant who lived in an extremely splendid house with his three extremely beloved daughters. Sorry. Just starting and I already can't read. Ernest Fortune was his name. Or rather, Ernest Jeremiah Augustus Fortune, Esquire, Merchant, as it said on his business card. Mr. Fortune was a very successful businessman, and he had two favorite sayings: fortune by name, fortune by favor, by nature. Was one always said with a broad smile and a merry crinkling of his eyes as he rattled the coins in his pocket. "I simply can't say no to my girls," was the other, at which he'd hold up his hands and dip his head with a pleased look that suggested he was anything but sorry about it. For the three girls were the very apples of Mr. Fortune's eye. He couldn't have loved them anymore, he would tell you, each in her own special way, as he pulled from his pocket the precious pictures he always carried with him, ready to show anyone who was interested, and even some who weren't. "This one's Gertrude," he would say, "my eldest. Charming girl, loads of fun, loves her jewels, hopeless with money. Spoil her rotten." And if you looked a little more closely at Gertrude's picture, Mr. Fortune might point out the gorgeous diamond necklace that she wore and the splendid emerald earrings. "Cost me a pretty penny, I tell you," he'd say proudly. "But, and you know it was coming, I simply can't say no to my girls." Now you might consider that Gertrude, in fact, looked a little spoiled and not very grateful. But already Mr. Fortune would have handed over the next picture. "Hermione," he'd say, "absolutely lovely, smashing girl, mad about clothes, height of fashion, dreadfully expensive. Never refuse her." And if you looked a little more closely at Hermione's picture, Mr. Fortune might point out the glimmering silken dress she wore and the very impressive hat. Cost me an arm and a leg. Ugh, he'd say, smiling happily. But, well, what can you do? And here you might reflect that Hermione looked, in fact, rather mean and somewhat overdressed. But Fortune would have moved on again. "Beauty," he would begin, but here, quite unexpectedly, his voice would break. His eyes would start to water, and a tear would roll down his plump, rosy cheek. Then he would pause for a moment, as if to collect himself. "Always reminds me of her poor dear mother," he would say quietly, at which Mr. Fortune would smile bravely and blow his nose loudly while you looked a little more closely at Beauty's picture. She was a girl of such simple, radiant beauty that it would take your breath away. There were no expensive jewels or fine fabrics for Mr. Fortune to point out. She needed none. Her skin itself was smooth as pearls, and her hair as fine as silk, and her large smiling eyes shone straight at yours, full of life and a warmth as generous as the sun's. "A treasure," Mr. Fortune would tell you. "Kind as can be, spoils me rotten, never asks for a thing. Loved by her presence, won't let me. Doesn't matter. Always looks fabulous. Beauty by name, beauty by nature. I suppose couldn't wish for more." And that, you might think, was worth more than all the money in the world. For with three such beloved daughters, Mr. Fortune could surely look forward to a long, happy, comfortable, and untroubled life. But you would be wrong, for appearances can be deceptive, and that is where our story truly begins. Sorry. It all started one summer on a perfect, a perfectly normal day. The birds sang and the sun shone on the magnificent town square where the Fortunes lived in their enormous house. Mr. Fortune left for work early, as usual, picked up by his coachman in his luxurious carriage. Sorry. And the three girls passed the mornings away as they always did. Hermione and Gertrude adorned themselves with their finest finery and entertained the many young bachelors who courted them each day with invitations to balls and dinners and glamorous parties. Indeed, they had so many invitations that they sometimes went to 3 or 4 parties in one evening, which perhaps explained why they were both growing a little plumper than they used to be, though their outfits were so dazzling you would hardly notice. Certainly the young men seemed not to, nor did they appear to mind that Hermione and Gertrude were often very rude to them and always, without so much as a thank you, greedily gulped the chocolates the bachelors brought as presents, without offering any to anybody else at all, ever. But Hermione and Gertrude were so wealthy, and the young men so eager to marry them, that no amount of rudeness could put them off. While her sisters were entertaining, Beauty would run up and down the stairs every time the bell rang, answering the door and greeting all the visitors. Hermione and Gertrude never thanked her for it. Still, Beauty was glad to see them so popular, though she wished that the young men weren't quite so obviously interested in their riches. Beauty was too young to have any admirers herself, but in any case, her own heart was set on marrying not for money, but for love. She dreamed of the day when she would be swept off her feet by some irresistibly fine and handsome young suitor, a prince among men, and quite probably a real prince as well. For Beauty had no doubt that such a day would come. She'd read enough love stories, all of which involved marrying a prince and living happily ever after. And you know, you never know when that prince might come to your door. Now, of course, real life doesn't always work out like that. But Beauty was still young and romantic and full of dreams. So you can imagine her shock when once more the bell rang, and once more she ran to answer it, full of her secret hopes of love. And there before her stood her father. At least, she thought it was her father. But it took a moment to recognize him. In the few hours he'd been away, Mr. Fortune had altered completely, as if he had suddenly aged many years. He had shrunk into himself, a ghost of the father she knew. He looked pale and worn, and so ill with worry that Beauty feared he would fall down on the steps before her very eyes. "Papa," she gasped, taking him by the arm and leading him into the nearest chair, where he sat, slumped, while Beauty called to her sisters to come quickly, and the young men hurried from the house, making their excuses and averting their eyes as if some awful shame or sickness might infect them if they lingered. "Oh, my dearest children," groaned Mr. Fortune, when they at last were all gathered round him, "I have a terrible tale to tell you." And so the story came out. As evening fell, the family sat huddled in a deepening gloom. Let me start that over again. And so the story came out. As evening fell and the family sat huddled in a deepening gloom. It had been a dreadful, disastrous day at Mr. Fortune's office. Fires had burned his warehouses. Storms had sunk his ships. Within hours, everything was lost. His business collapsed. His savings were gone. And still, he owed more than he could pay. In a word, he was ruined, and the name of Fortune was just a cruel mockery. To pay the debts, they must sell the house, all the fine paintings and furniture, the clothes and jewelry, everything. In short, we have to go, and they would flee the town the very next day to find cheap lodgings in the country wherever they could. "But what will become of us?" cried Hermione and Gertrude. "Oh, Father, how could you?" Mr. Fortune shook his head in silent misery, and Beauty wrapped her arms around him. "Don't worry, Papa," she said. "We'll be all right." "Don't be so ridiculous, you stupid little girl," Hermione snapped furiously. "Nothing's ever going to be all right again." There were no admiring young men to wave them off the next morning as the unhappy Fortunes set out in a sad single cart carried by their oldest, lamest horse. There was no sun to warm them. No birdsong to lift their spirits. It was a bleak, gray day with a bitter wind that blew as if overnight the summer had turned to cruel winter. And there was no bright glitter of diamonds to rustle the fine silk, only one thin blanket to shelter them, and the constant wailing of Hermione and Gertrude. 3 cold days and colder nights they traveled, far from the city and deep into the country. It was a terrible journey through stony fields on roads churned to mud in the endless stinging rain. Strange, suspicious faces glared at them from behind closed windows. Angry dogs chased them on their way. At last, exhausted, hungry, and chilled to the bone, they found a place to stop. It was a small, run-down cottage with a tiny garden overgrown with weeds and thorns. But it did not matter, for they were so tired they could not move another step, and the cottage seemed to welcome them as if it were their home. And home it became over the weeks and months that followed as the Fortunes tried to make the best of their new life. Hermione and Gertrude grumbled all the time, for they hated being poor and refused to get their hands dirty. But Beauty worked hard to help her father, and soon the cottage was clean and warm and the garden cleared and planted. There was a stable for the horse and enough food for them all. But each evening, as they sat around the fire, a gloomy silence settled over the Fortune family, for the sad truth was that not a single one of them was happy. You following along? Good. Hermione and Gertrude, of course, loathed it all. How could their father have been so selfish and stupid as to lose all his money? What would become of them now? Why shouldn't they have lovely clothes and jewels? Didn't he understand how many parties they were missing? Mr. Fortune was miserable too. How he longed to cheer his daughters with glorious surprises, but he didn't have a penny to his name. Once he couldn't say no to his girls, now he couldn't say yes. Hermione and Gertrude seemed to grow more short-tempered by the day. Even Beauty, the lovely, kind Beauty, though she worked hard and tried to be cheerful, sometimes could not hide her sadness, and that made Mr. Fortune feel worse than anything. For Beauty was sad. She was sorry for her father, of course, and for her sisters, but it was more than that. The cottage was fine and the country was pretty, and she didn't mind the work, but, oh, it was so lonely and so quiet. Nothing ever happened. There were no visitors now, no bells ringing, no doors to open with the secret hope of being swept off her feet, head over heels in love. It was becoming clear to Beauty, as the months went by, that no handsome young prince was ever going to knock on the door of their little cottage. So it was a rather unhappy Beauty who came downstairs one morning, a whole year later, to find that a message had arrived from the city with wonderful, unexpected news. A ship had docked that had been thought lost at sea, and some of the cargo might be Mr. Fortune's. They would be rich again. Mr. Fortune prepared to leave at once and kiss the girls goodbye, promising to bring each a splendid present. "Silks," simpered Hermione, almost overcome with excitement. "Pearls," whimpered Gertrude, barely able to speak for joy. "And Beauty," said Mr. Fortune, turning to his youngest daughter. But Beauty's dreams could not be bought. "Nothing, thank you," she murmured, "but your safe return." "That you shall have," he answered. "But nothing?" There was sorrow in his voice, for he knew how unhappy his daughter had become. "Come now, I would bring you anything." "I would like my prince," thought Beauty. And then she looked up, ashamed to have disappointed him. Her father loved giving presents. Desperately, she tried to think of something, anything. "I am sorry, Father. If it would please you, I would like a rose. They do not grow here, and I miss them very much." Her sisters could hardly contain their disgust. "What a waste," they whispered furiously to each other. "Stupid goody-goody. What's she playing at?" But they dared not say anything in front of their father, and he was thrilled. "You shall have the..." "You shall have the finest rose money can buy," exclaimed Mr. Fortune. And with that, he was on his way, as fast as his horse could carry him. When Mr. Fortune reached the city, however, things did not turn out as he had hoped. He still owed money. The cargo from the ship was seized to pay his debts, and in spite of a great deal of trouble and effort, he left for home a few days later, empty-handed, and just as poor as he had come. It was a tiring journey, and he was some 30 miles from the cottage, looking forward to seeing his daughters again and worrying only about how he would tell them the bad news. When, as night fell, the wind grew cold and a terrible blizzard blew up, Mr. Fortune sought shelter in a great forest. But the weather was so dreadful and the trees were so dense that he was soon completely lost. Exhausted now, he clung to the horse's neck as best he could, while icy branches knocked him hard every step, and in the awful howling of the wind, he seemed to hear the cries of wolves circling greedily, just waiting for the moment, not far off, when he would surely fall and die. All seemed hopeless when at last he saw a distant gleam of light dimly shining through the wood. Stumbling, Mr. Fortune followed it as the trees thinned and the light grew stronger, until suddenly he was out of the forest. Then, in one unforgettable instant, the bitter wind dropped all at once. And then still, crisp air was filled with the warm scent of a thousand orange trees, which were glowing in the astonishing brightness of a gigantic palace, lit at every window from top to bottom. Mr. Fortune gazed in wonder as his horse carried him across the smooth, thick, white carpet of snow, all sounds muffled. Beyond the great carpet of snow, Mr. Fortune rode down an avenue of trees, hung with bells and lanterns, past sweeping lawns and flower beds, and hedges shaped like fabulous creatures that might almost have been alive, while at every step, songbirds sang as if to greet him. The palace itself was too large, too dazzling to take it all in at once. It seemed to go on forever, with countless wings and windows, towers and turrets, all in perfect proportion, and on a scale far greater and more beautiful than anything Mr. Fortune had ever seen. And it had a splendid stable. His horse had walked right into it and found it full of hay and oats and warm, dry bedding. Mr. Fortune left him munching happily and made his way to the huge front door of the palace. There he stood for a moment, expecting that in such a place there would be a footman or servants to welcome him, but none came. Surprised, Mr. Fortune raised his hand instead to the door knocker, studded with precious stones and carved from solid gold. It was larger than a man's head and looked impossibly heavy. But as he touched it, the great door swung silently open, and Mr. Fortune entered the palace. He found himself in a vast entrance hall, enchantingly furnished and lit by thousands of sparkling candles, their reflections shimmering on every surface. A warm fire blazed in an enormous hearth, and Mr. Fortune hurried forward to dry himself, for his clothes were still cold and wet. At the far end of the room, he noticed a table set for one person, with a meal that looked and smelled almost unbearably delicious. "Perhaps whoever lives here will offer me some," he thought. But after an hour, when the clock struck 10 and no one had appeared, the famished Mr. Fortune could stand it no longer. He sat down and feasted on the finest supper he had ever tasted, a accompanied by several glasses of the most excellent wine. Afterwards, he was very tired, and so, feeling now really quite at home, he made his way up the immense staircase in search of a bed, finding at once a door that opened to a sumptuous four-poster. He lay down and fell straight to sleep. You're not asleep yet? Oh my god. Thought for sure you would have dozed off by now. Yes, I'll keep reading to you. It was late that next morning before Mr. Fortune awoke, fully refreshed from his deep slumber. When he turned to dress, imagine his astonishment on finding that his old clothes had been replaced by a brand new suit that fit so well and might have been tailor-made for him. "Well," he muttered aloud, "this is very fine. Fortune by nature, indeed." And then he smiled. "Or perhaps some kind of fairy lives here, who has taken a shine to me." Rather pleased with this amusing thought, Mr. Fortune went downstairs to the great hall, and having thoroughly enjoyed the lavish breakfast that seemed to be laid out for him, he spoke to the empty room. "Thank you, kind fairy, for your very generous hospitality. You have a splendid house. I must be on my way now, but please do call on our humble abode whenever you're passing." And feeling very cheerful, Mr. Fortune went out to find his horse. The way to the stable seemed a little different from the night before, and Mr. Fortune found himself in a part of the garden he had not previously noticed. It was given over entirely to roses, red roses of the most exquisite loveliness and perfection, their color brilliant against the whiteness of the ground, their red petals streaked with snow, and with a fragrance so strong and heady, it seemed to lull the very songbirds. As he enjoyed their scent, Mr. Fortune remembered Beauty's request. Delighted to be able to bring at least one of his daughters the gift she had asked for, he selected the finest, reddest, most beautiful rose he could see, and with the very greatest care and attention, snapped it smartly off. All at once, the sky darkened as if a shadow had fallen across the world. The earth shook. The songbirds flew off, screeching, and a howl of pain and anger filled the air. Mr. Fortune started to turn, but a huge clawed fist seized his shoulder and spun him around like a rag doll. To face a creature so ugly that Mr. Fortune almost fainted with fright. "How dare you? How dare you steal my rose?" it growled. "I saved your life." It spat out the word. Like a sour taste. "And in return you stole my rose." The terrible eyes blazed with rage. "You will pay for it with your life. Prepare to die." "I beg you," pleaded Mr. Fortune in in horror, barely able to control his voice. "Forgive me, please. It was an honest mistake. My daughter wanted a rose. It is for her. I meant no harm. You've been so kind, my lord." "Do not call me lord," roared the creature. "Do not try to flatter me with pretty words. I do not like it. We should say what we mean and be what we are. I am a beast. My name is Beast, and you will call me Beast. Beast by nature, beast by name, beast, beast, beast." He shuddered as if trying to control himself, and then he pointed at the cowering Mr. Fortune. "You said you have a daughter." "Yes, my beast," stammered the desperate man. "Three. I can show you their pictures." "Don't," spat the beast. "Pictures mean nothing. I want your life, but I will take your daughter instead. Then you may leave." Sorry. "Then you may live, but she must come of her own free will. I give you one day. Now go and bring her, or return alone and die. Swear to do this, or I will kill you at once." "I swear on my life," answered Mr. Fortune hastily, thinking this way at least he would have the chance to say farewell to his beloved daughters before returning to meet his fate. "Then go," said the beast, turning away. "There are some gifts with your horse. I would not leave your daughters empty-handed." As the beast lumbered slowly off, Mr. Fortune ran as fast as he could for the stables, desperate to get away. His horse was waiting for him, with a brand new saddle and harness, and on its back was strapped a great trunk, full of more fine dresses and jewelry than his daughters could have ever imagined. But no riches could comfort Mr. Fortune as the horse carried him home, for the beast had broken his heart. It was Beauty who saw him first, a small, dark smudge in the broad, white landscape. "He's coming," she called. "He's here." At once, Hermione and Gertrude ran out ahead of her, desperate for their parents, screaming with delight at the sight of Mr. Fortune's handsome new suit, too excited to notice the tears running down his cheeks. They threw open the lid of the magnificent trunk, and oh, what joy! What precious things! What ecstasy of wealth was theirs! But as Mr. Fortune gave Beauty her rose, his voice was cracked with grief. "My darling Beauty," he said, "your present has cost me more than any treasure." And then outpoured the whole story of his ordeal. They listened in horror, scarcely able to believe that such a monster could exist. Perhaps poverty and their father's disappointment in the city had simply driven him mad. But gradually Mr. Fortune convinced them that he was speaking the absolute truth. The horror gave way to anger, and anger quickly turned to blame. Beauty's sisters glared at her. "You always have to be different, don't you?" Hermione said bitterly. "Why couldn't you ask for something normal?" "Bring me a rose, Papa. Bring me a rose," mocked Gertrude. You think you're so special, and now you've ruined everything. But Beauty didn't say anything. She hardly even heard their words. It is no one's fault but mine, she was thinking. Her beloved father was in terrible, terrible trouble, all because of her. He will not die, she thought. The rose is mine. I will go. I will gladly go. And then, as if she were waking from a deep sleep, she suddenly spoke out. Father, she said, don't be sad. You picked the rose for me, and I will go to this beast. They all looked at her in astonishment. No, Beauty, said her father. Yes, father, she said with a firmness that surprised everyone, even herself. I know what I must do, and my mind is made up. And however much they argued, late into the night, there was no changing Beauty's mind. Even if her father tried to set off alone, she said, she would follow him. By the time they fell asleep, too tired to talk anymore, it was settled. Beauty would meet the beast. I think that's enough for tonight. Finally fell asleep. We'll continue with this adventure some more tomorrow night. My love.